Welcome, everyone, to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is episode number 34, and today, upon some reader or listener suggestion, they wanted to see me do a series of doing kind of top five players at each offensive skill position that I evaluate who are in the NFL right now. And I thought it'd be fun to kind of take it a step further and have some guests who, you know, certainly have a lot of experience and skill at working or evaluating that position as well, to also give their thoughts on who are five players that they would pick to have head up an NFL team at that position. And so today I'm bringing aboard Will Hewlett, who has been a guest, you know, a number of times in the RSP film rooms as well as on this podcast. Will is a quarterback trainer who has worked with a variety of players at all levels, you know, from the pro level to Division I college to high school level. You know, and Will, you can tell me whether I need to delete this out, but I know one of your clients is was Drew Bledsoe's kids, you know, yeah. As a matter of
fact. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yep. Okay.
I started working with Drew's kids about almost 2 years ago. John Bledsoe was at Washington State, and then Henry, who's going to be a senior in high school. So yeah, I got introduced to him through Damon Heward, who played about 13 years in the NFL. I started working with his son, so got into this ex-NFL dad of quarterback world, which is cool. They're all great guys, and it's a little bizarre. I'll tell you what, training in front of a guy that's, you know, a possible Hall of Fame level quarterback telling his kid what to do, but good experience nonetheless. And it's been awesome.
And that should give, you know, give listeners an idea. I mean, I know you're not saying this yourself, but I know this: if I had a kid who wanted to play quarterback and they were interested in getting that type of training on fundamentals and working on those types of things, I would imagine that if former NFL players want their kids to work with you, that's a pretty good sign for, you know, what Will brings to the table here. So we're going to lead off this with, you know, our top five quarterbacks. And I told Will we're not going to do this in any specific order, because I think at this point it can be splitting hairs with some of these players, even though there may be, you know, and with fans, it's like, you know, some of you, you know, you may like a player so much that it's kind of like, how can you put this guy number three and this guy number two? And it's just like, they're all terrific because they all belong in this area. Yeah. And, you know, you can go from there. So, you know, how about, you know, who would be one of the first guys that come to mind for you in this top five?
I mean, it's kind of, it's almost cliche by now. I mean, it's, you know, I start almost every conversation of my life with Aaron Rodgers introduced in some capacity. So I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't roll with him as my guy to start with. And we did say not in any particular order, but you know, he's the one that pops to mind just immediately in terms of if you want to build a program around. For me, you know, and he's probably a common pick for a lot of people. It's an easy one. It's hard for, if anyone criticizes you for selecting Aaron Rodgers, who would be the kind of the first one that comes to mind. I feel like they probably have an agenda, or they're a Vikings fan or something. But I think that he's kind of where, you know, in terms of starting an organization or any capacity, you could trade for one guy. That would be the guy, if he was available, that I would always start with. But Rodgers is kind of, you know, and we said no particular order, but first one that comes to mind definitely off the bat is A-Rod.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, I know that I've certainly tweeted out some of your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers, just watching some of his throws and showing how that he can kind of create his own tech, you know, his own kind of way of being able to get the ball out accurately in ways that aren't maybe, you know, by the book. And that's one of the things that certainly sets him apart.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, this when breaking down quarterbacks, evaluating quarterbacks, this, you know, you got your traditional ratings that you look at, like arm strength and athleticism and footwork. And yeah, I mean, those are all kind of givens, right? You're not going to make the NFL if you don't have, you don't check the box in most of those areas. And so then, you know, the next level of scouting, which is probably more important and often overlooked at every level, is going to be, you know, ability to make plays under pressure, which, you know, Aaron's shown game after game that, you know, it's, I mean, people were just furious at Ty Montgomery because of that fumble, because they're like, well, we've got A-Rod, he's going to win the game for us, which, and you almost, you know, it's unlikely if a lot of other quarterbacks are there, but he's a guy that you're like, oh no, they're going to win. And so there's that. And then there's the classic, you know, off schedule, out of pocket plays, which I think with guys like Patrick Mahomes, you know, are starting to make that part of football a little bit more, less, polarizing or less, I think people look at A-Rod as kind of like an anomaly sometimes, like, oh, you know, coaches will often say, you know, watch his film, but don't do anything that he does. And I kind of scratch my head at that with younger players. I'm like, well, but, you know, you got to start somewhere. And I think Cliff Kingsbury made a comment about Patrick Mahomes. I tweeted something about it recently, but, you know, him not getting the playmaking, the making plays coached out of him. And so I think A-Rod's always been in a position where he's been able to, you know, be coached, at the right times and been able to take some risks, and learn from those. So those things to me just make it easy for a team to, roll with him just because he can create something out of nothing. You know, you can't blitz him. You can't, he's going to make you pay in so many different ways. So it's just, The whole game, his whole game is so complete in so many ways.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, we often see from a fan perspective, a quarterback's being kind of broken down into two groups in terms of the pocket passers and the guys who can, who are more mobile and maneuverable on a on an improvisational level. But he's a guy that certainly has both on that level. Yeah. And it's, and that sets him apart.
And that's a, you know, you get that in college recruiting. You got dual threat and then pro style. I'm a firm believer that the NFL really there's only one type of quarterback that plays in the NFL. And there's, I guess, spectrums either way. You know, some guys are more athletic than others. But if you can't navigate in the pocket under pressure and extend the play, you're just not going to make it regardless. So it doesn't, you know, like I think, you could make the argument about Cam Newton, his length in the league, his, you know, career isn't because he's a great running quarterback. It's just not, I think I pulled up a stat earlier. He's already, you know, he's already had almost close to 250 attempts this year, throwing the ball. And so, you know, do you look at him like, you know, a dual threat quarterback? Okay. Well, he can probably run better than a lot of guys, but you can't last in the NFL if you're not a thrower, not a passing quarterback. And I think it's just, you know, what's your ability to process offense and deal with pressure. And I think that's really what defines the position in the NFL.
You know, this is a tough question, but are there any areas in Rodgers' game that if you were going to do a scouting report on him that you would say, here's some areas that are kind of his weaknesses or, you know, things that he can get better at, even at this stage of his career, recognizing him as maybe the first player that you would select that comes to mind?
Yeah. I tend to think that all the mistakes that happen in the Packers offense is someone else's fault. it's hard to say, man, because you really don't know, honestly, you know, if something goes wrong, was that someone else? Or was that him? And then, you know, you could question coaching, you could question, you know, receivers or whatever the case is. That's a hard one to evaluate. And I feel like that, you know, if you went something on the technical side, I don't see anyone else. Well, I mean, Mahomes, I think you can put in that class, but he's the guy that's making all the throws from any angle, any level. You know, I think he's only thrown one interception this year, so you can't criticize him for turning the ball over. And then the footwork may look different from traditional footwork in the NFL. But then, you know, it's you can't criticize him for that either, because it's not like it gets him into trouble. If anything, it gets him out of trouble with some of the techniques that he uses. So it is an extremely difficult question to answer. And I think that, you know, it's probably nothing that stands out to me as really a weakness. I don't know, maybe he's like really angry when he hasn't eaten in a while or something, is mean to his teammates or something. I'm not sure. Like, I can't, you know, where do you pick him with a guy?
If I were to nitpick anything, yeah. and I'm only even posing it as a theory more than something that I've even looked at close enough. But occasionally I notice that I look and go, could he be better in terms of checking into run plays or being more, you know, not leaning so much on the air game and being able to, when the team gets into a rhythm running the ball on the occasion that it has, you know, can he be a little bit better on saying, let the run game happen and not try and push so hard to throw
it? Yeah. I mean, and I think that's, if there's something there, you know, I'm sure there is some kind of weakness within his game, and it probably boils down to like, you know, something on the mental side that he may struggle with that we don't fully know about. And that could very well be it. You know, sometimes he feels like he's got to do it all. You know, I mean, and I guess the easy comparison to make is you got the Patriots and the Packers as kind of the two, you know, you got Brady and Rodgers as the, you know, the two guys that I think everyone kind of argues over who's better. And, you know, I'm always curious to see how bad the Packers would be without Rodgers for a long, you know, long term. Maybe they'd be okay. And same with the Patriots, you know. So there's probably some situations where Rodgers could probably maybe, you know, give the ball a little bit more. But you got to wonder, you know, I mean, I don't even recall him ever really with a running back that was, you know, a pro ball guy that, you know, we're talking about. That's going to go
on Green with Brett Favre.
Sure. You know? Right. Exactly. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic there. That is a good question and a good theory. And I guess we may never know.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to mention a guy that comes to mind for me that, you know, we all know probably Tom Brady's going to be on this list.
Sure.
And we'll talk about him, but you know, the other guy that I would, you know, that comes to mind for me pretty much right away is Russell Wilson.
Sure.
And I, you know, for me, it's for, you know, he doesn't have quite the insane physical skills that Aaron Rodgers has in terms of the arm talent.
Sure.
But his ability he reminds me so much of a point guard in the open court in terms of his ability to distribute the ball on the move with touch. And see the field, and I would say he has a heightened ability to create in the pocket and outside the pocket that makes him so dangerous. But I think his ability to work in the pocket is underrated, and I've often heard the, you know, he struggles to make those throws in the pocket, and I keep thinking, well, what pocket are you talking about all these years? Seattle, because on the rare occasion when the cicadas come to come to town, I actually see a pocket and I'm thinking he seems to operate just fine from that. He did that very well at Wisconsin with those tall linemen, and so I'm a huge fan, and to me, more than anything, that puts him on the list above anybody who isn't, you know, at the venerable age that they are.
Yep.
You know, I was going to start a team, he'd probably be it. And it would be because when you look at the mental toughness and leadership and positive attitude, and I know that there are fans and people who go into the whole sports radio thing and talk about, you know, he's not loved by his teammates and he seems plasticky and everything's a little too manicured in terms of his image. But I've always kind of joked that he's like Michael Corleone in The Godfather. He's like, he's very manicured with his image, but he'd rip your heart out in an instant when it comes to the competitiveness. And And it was, and it, when you watch what he did against the Packers in that championship game and what he did against the, you know, the Carolina Panthers when they were down 27-0 in that playoff game, and how he just keeps coming back, you know, as a player, and is able to shake off mistake after mistake and still be able to get his team in the position to win. To me, that speaks way more in terms of anything else that I see from a, from that mental perspective of how a player is.
No, I love that. And I don't disagree at all. I think, you know, this, in my world, I get caught up in, and I see a lot of coaches and people and, you know, scouts and fans, and everyone falls in love with the physical characteristics of the game. And those are things that are very eye catching and tend to make you think. It's like the classic one is that, you know, tall quarterbacks have to prove they're not good, whereas shorter quarterbacks have to prove they are good multiple times over. Right. And you got that stigma, and it's like the first time they mess up, it's like, oh, they're not tall enough, you know? And then, you know, and then the tall quarterback is like, oh, you know, he needs better coaching or something, whatever it is. So you got those stigmas that I think stick in people's minds and cloud, you know, it's like the, they want to prove what they initially thought of someone. And Wilson has, you know, eliminated the height issue almost completely. I don't think you hear anyone saying, you know, popping back up, why, he's got a problem with his, you know, how he sees the field. And then you get a guy like Drew Brees, who's maybe an inch and a half taller, that just, you know, holds the all-time NFL record for passing yardage. So, you know, those things, and I guess my point is that the quarterback position at the end of the day, you know, the arm and athleticism gets you onto the field, right? And those things are, you know, going to be separating factors in so many ways, but there's tons of more athletic guys out there than Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson that aren't playing quarterback and that aren't in the NFL. And because it's that grit, that leadership, that ability to make the large moment small and kind of block it all out and go make plays. And that guy's done it, man. He's, you know, he's another guy that, if you were a betting man, it would be hard to bet against people like those in you know, in clutch situations. I just can't see, you know, you always got to feel like they're going to come through when it matters.
Yeah. The creativity in his game is something that I just really like too, because you just see the variety of touch and ways that he can put air under the ball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that it's just, it sometimes it feels like he's throwing trick shots up there, you know? Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's like, so to me, there's a thing with that. And I have a story with you that just kind of makes me laugh. And it's not one that is indicative of how you evaluate a quarterback, but there's just fun layers of anecdotal stories that sometimes come through. And when I was at the Senior Bowl covering it and he was there, one of my friends is colleagues, his name is Cecil Lammy, who is a radio host, drive time radio host for Denver in Denver, and covers the Broncos and writes at footballguys.com. And Cecil and I go every year, and he was interviewing Russell Wilson. This is the year that Tim Tebow was also at the Senior Bowl. And so he's there, and I'm like interviewing someone else and just wrapped up, and it's a media night, and which is just kind of a whole dog and pony show kind of thing for players that I look at them and I feel sorry for them in that situation. But he's interviewing Russell Wilson across the hall, and I see him, and all of a sudden I see him say something to him, and Russell Wilson just bolts upright in his chair, and his body language for the briefest moment, his hands were kind of down, his shoulders were back, his chest was puffed up, and he looked angry. And then, and then very quickly, it just kind of, calmed down, and he smiled like he normally smiles and said something, and Cecil just nodded. And you know, about 20 minutes later, the interviews were over and we left and got in the car, and I said, What did you say to Russell Wilson that got him angry? Because he looked like somebody who was about to get into a fight outside of someplace. Like you see two guys who were like pushing each other and they puffed their chests out. And I said, for the briefest moment, he did that. And then he smiled and he said, you caught that? I said, yeah. He goes, he started laughing. He goes, you know, I'm the Broncos were rumored to like Tim Tebow. He said, you know, at that point, he goes, so I asked him. Or we had Tim Tebow. It wasn't Tim Tebow was there. It was Tim Tebow was starting for the Broncos that year and had that playoff victory. And he goes, he asked Russell Wilson at the end of his interview, he goes, how would you like to be starting to be working behind Tim Tebow in Denver? And he said that Russell Wilson stood up and he noticed that too. And then he just looked at him and smiled and says, I don't intend to be backing up anybody in the NFL.
Love it.
Yeah. And so at that point I was, you know, and it was just a great, it was just that competitive nature you see. So, you know, who's another one on your list? And if Russell's on your list, fine. If not, who else is on your list?
Yeah. So, you know, it's actually, I feel like there's a year where there's more than, you know, your fair share of guys to kind of pick from. And I feel like there's always kind of a five top tier guys. And I think part of that comes along with the wins, et cetera. But a guy that I think that I'm just loving the way he's playing the game right now is Jared Goff out in LA.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many things about his game. And I'm trying to, there's some personal bias there. I've known Jared since high school and watched him closely at Cal as he came up through the ranks there. But I've loved watching him do, one of the things that stood out really is, you know, his ability to kind of pick up a receiver crossing the field on these, you know, these deep cross variations, and kind of layering through his reads and progressions and then really delivering a, you know, strike. And I feel like there's been a jump in his velocity this year. I don't know if I'm just watching it a different way, but there's a couple throws I've seen him make where he's been kind of sitting back there in the pocket in a compromised position with some pressure. And I've seen some rips from him that just kind of jumped off. It was like, wow, like, I don't know if I've seen that kind of snap out of his throw. So I feel like he's really settling in and you know, the little marriage there between McVay and Goff, I think, is perfect. I think that's a theme that you'll find with all great quarterbacks is there is a great coach that's helped direct their talent the correct way. And I think he's really figured out Goff and Goff's figured out him. And that's a fun one to watch. You know, with the system and the gameplay right now, he's doing stuff that I think he's within the system and then beyond it with some of the, you know, throws that he's making.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned him because he was probably if I took away the older guys who if the premise were, mm-hmm. you know, the guys who were in their late 30s, early 40s on my list, he would probably be on my list easily, you know, and he's on top of my list of guys deserving more mention. And I love what you mentioned about the technique and in terms of his velocity, because there was a throw yesterday or 2 days ago where, you know, he gets pressured up the middle by a defensive tackle, has to slide and roll halfway to his left. And how quickly he was able to reset and fire that ball to Brandon Cooks, only where Cooks could make that catch. I thought that was special.
Yep.
You know, and it's that technique. I think he's so technically sound and he's so quick at transitioning from, you know, one movement to another that can be difficult. And that's the thing I've always liked about his game is his pocket presence. I think he's always had phenomenal pocket presence where, you know, so many quarterbacks will bolt when they see a flash of color coming into the pocket. And he has that vision to look downfield and still be able to go, you know what, like a boxer who's timing another guy's punch, he can just wait till that last split second and just make one little half step, just a little bit of a bob or a feint, and that defender completely misses, and he's in great position to throw downfield. And I think that's so overlooked in his game that mm-hmm. people thought he was like horrible in the pocket as a rookie, when in fact it was more like, he's not going to do Russell Wilson things. He's going to do Tom Brady things, but he needs a Tom Brady pocket yep. for him to do that.
100%. I remember very specifically, there was a moment in his college career where Cal played at Oregon. I think it was a Pac-12 championship. And this was his true sophomore year, I believe. And they actually, Tony Franklin was the OC, did a fantastic job with him, who's now at Middle Tennessee State. And they would bring in Luke Rubenza, who was a safety slash quarterback there, to run the ball on, you know, downs that were fit within the offense. But I remember watching, it was Marcus Mariota, who was, you know, going to be one of the top guys in Goff, who was kind of on nobody's radar. I mean, he was on radars that mattered, that media right. hadn't kind of caught on yet. And it wasn't until that offseason where everyone was like, this guy's the man. But I watched the game and I was like, this guy is better than Mariota. And I think yeah. Mariota's a stud. And I was like, why hasn't anyone else seen this? And it's just, again, the pocket presence, the ability to sit back there. You know, one thing about his offense at Cal, you know, what I've been studying closely, the air raid offense, which is basically, you know, a style of spread football that was kind of broken off from the old Norm Chow, BYU, you know, days. Yeah, it's kind of like the West Coast went one way and air raid went the other. And air raid is, you know, these passing concepts, and it's a philosophy of style of play. And you're seeing a lot of guys now, Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, these guys are from air raid, you know, schools. But, you know, he'd run these RPOs where I think Gruden would joke about, you know, the nickname for RPOs should have been something like bad protection plays and, right. You know, bad protection offense or something. Anyway, he would sit back and, you know, pull the ball and throw these, you know, skinny posts off of like, you know, run plays and just get smashed in the face. But like you said, he would wait to the very last second and he'd pull the trigger and it would be completion. And I think that really helped shape his game in a good way going into the NFL.
Yeah, because that toughness is something that, you know, you see young players who they get hit over and over and they're not used to taking mm-hmm. punishment, or they're not used to losing. They're not used to having to like yep. Start from the bottom, and you see their confidence just deflate. All the air goes out of their game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's a guy that, you know, and I think you see that with his game. You see that kind of toughness. And that's what I love about him, is that there is a toughness to how he plays that game, but that precision is absolutely there. I mean, I think as far as technicians go at mm-hmm. the game, he's one of the young stars in the yeah. game at that level. So you mentioned Goff. I'll go to an old technician and just talk about Drew Brees, because the yeah. way that guy works, yeah. I mean, the way he works, we might be talking about him for another 3 years at this yep. rate if he doesn't get a Super Bowl. I mean, his ability to create space in the pocket and find throwing lanes. I love his deep accuracy. I would put some of his deep throws in tight pockets, maneuvering away from pressure and finding guys. Some of the pinpoint passes I've seen him throw are absolutely magical. And then you just have the way that he just processes the game, because you can have him roll out, you can have him work from the pocket. He's someone that he certainly is athletic enough that he can get yards for you. He's not going to get spied on by, right. you know, defenders, but he can really do it all. And he knows his limitations so well that you don't see him push past his limitations to his detriment. And when I look at the receivers he's had compared to other NFL receivers, I've always joked that it's like, you know, he's the kind of guy that if receivers are like, you know, flammable things and you're trying to start a fire, he could probably start, you know, he could probably rub two wet sticks together in a monsoon and yep. start a raging fire. It's just, his game is amazing in that respect to me.
Yeah. I mean, and it's almost like, you know, I'm so glad that he has won a Super Bowl. And he definitely doesn't get talked about enough. I think, you know, he's a 70% completion percentage guy, I think, this season right now. And that says a lot. There's, you know, just an element to his game and where, again, it's, he kind of asked that question before, like, what do you pick on in his game? And you got to wonder again, you know, if there's ever a mistake, is it really his fault at this stage? You know, these guys are just so far ahead. There's so many light years down the track into, you know, understanding the game, the timing, the speed, that there's so few errors that are made in the way that they play. And he's a guy that, you know, you definitely want to model your game after, in terms of a young player and, you know, attention to detail, but he's got the whole package. You know, he can vary his drops depending on the concept. You know, it makes it difficult for defensive backs to really get a good read on what he's doing. There's an art form to, you know, your body posture and being able to look without turning your head. Give it a try sometime. Try to drop back sideways like a quarterback, not move your head and just look with your eyes. It's very difficult. And so he's a guy that picks up a lot of stuff peripherally and directly, and just, you know, it shows. You know, the accuracy trait is undefeated, man. If you can throw an accurate well-timed ball, that's kind of like something I feel like if you kind of check all the other levels in terms of athleticism and arm strength and toughness, that last stage of knowing when to pull the trigger, all the elite ones know that better than, you know, that they're throwing guys open. You know, the 50-50 ball is not a true 50-50 ball. It's an advantage to the offense because of how well they place it. So Breeze definitely has to be in that category, no doubt.
And I'm glad that you mentioned it, the 50-50 balls, because, I mean, he was probably one of the first that people really were talking about at the NFL level of throwing people open yeah. and being in an offense where that was encouraged to the level that it was. But then what you also mentioned that I just think I would love to just underline to everybody listening is the way I describe it is it's, you know, we often think of physical skill as dramatic action. Uh-huh. You know, dramatic movements, how fast or quick or elusive or how powerful. But he, you know, his physical skills are subtle and refined and advanced and very difficult. It's almost like he's that kind of guy that his physical skills show up in a phone booth because, yeah. like you mentioned, with the eye. The eye discipline and the ability to move the eyes like that and then draw, you know, when you talk about varying your drops, I mean, that's so important on, you know, plays that maybe break open very quickly mm-hmm. where a route, maybe a coverage breaks down and you can take advantage of it to a red zone play where mm-hmm. maybe you vary that drop in a compressed area so that you can hit something just immediately. And it's like, there's so many quarterbacks where their eyes see the leverage point and they know that, well, let me just get my next two steps in and, yeah. or let me get the next, or I know the next three or four I've got to make here so I can get in a position to throw. And with Breeze, it's like, he's got it refined to the point where he can say, let me curtail that. And within one step, the ball's out, or two steps, the ball's out, or I can throw it now, you know? And it's those differences in beats and that little step that it's just like boxing in that regard. I've been watching more boxing videos as well about how you use footwork to land a punch and gauge distance. And a lot of it also is about that rhythm that your opponent gets it used to, you being in a rhythm. And the way you broke that down is just fantastic. And it really does underscore the greatness of his game.
Yeah, I mean, and when we watch football, it's so easy to take these like mundane completions for granted. You know, like it's like, oh, it was a 6-yard gain. But what went into that pre-snap and then post-snap the setup, you know, that's where so much credit is due, whether it's just recognizing it or how he got that defensive back to, you know, hold the line a little bit longer. And I think those, you know, again, those are traits that we continue to see from the great ones.
Yeah. So just keeping score, we both have Rodgers.
Yeah.
You have Goff. I mentioned Wilson and Breeze.
Yeah.
Are either Wilson or Breeze on your list, Breeze, or do you have something?
For sure on my list. Yeah, absolutely. Okay,
so, all right. So yeah. who's your fourth player on your list?
So a guy that I kind of really jumped into, and see, the problem I have is, you know, I get on these little kicks where I just research certain players because I want to understand more about their game. And so I've been kind of immersed in this Shanahan world a little bit deeper this last couple off seasons with some of the camps and connections I've had. And a guy that I've really wanted to learn more about has been Kirk Cousins. And he's a guy, I think right now he's actually leading the NFL in attempts. I believe is in the 70% completion percentage range. And so those things they stand out to me as important things to recognize. You know, obviously he's got some fantastic receivers, but what I love about his style of play is he's kind of like this, you know, it's like a dad that plays football, which I kind of get a kick out of. You know, lack of swag is awesome. At the quarterback position, I think is always, I get a kick out of guys that, you know, I think he drives his like mom's minivan or something. But anyway, the dude can flat out sling it. And again, he stood out to me as someone that, and especially in the preseason, is where it really just showed how quickly we forget this is his first season with the Vikings. And so, you know, you're talking about guys like Rodgers and Breeze and Brady and Roethlisberger. They've been in the same system. They are the system. Like, that's it. They are the team. Right. And so this dude, you know, jumps into the Vikings this offseason and is having that kind of level of efficiency already. To me, that shows how good he is. And again, I know throwing to Diggs and Thielen make it a little bit easier, but still, that takes time to generate that continuity and gameplay between those two players, you know, those players. But love the ability to kind of just rip the ball in on. He's got this like intermediate accuracy and velocity that. You know, only a couple guys kind of jump out having, and Rodgers being one of those, where he'll see something kind of as it's happening and can kind of catch up and make the throw, place it in the right spot. And sometimes in the NFL, I think we get caught up in how complex offenses are, but believe it or not, there's a lot of guys out there that have some reads, you know, built in where it is they see man on a particular receiver. I think, you know, Calvin Johnson was kind of the best example of this with the Detroit Lions, where it's like, if there's anything that resembled one-on-one resembled
override everything else,
it's literally like, sorry guys, it's not going to happen. We're just going to wait for Calvin to kind of get open and then I'm going to throw the ball at him. and so now like, and that, and there's still an art to doing that. And I think, you know, Cousins has this ability to kind of, you know, find that mismatch and make that guy pay. And then I do love his, you know, his athleticism within the pocket. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Romo. I always thought Romo was just like a magician back there, running around making plays. And I think Cousins does a pretty good job of that as well. And yeah, live arm, I think super high football IQ, and really just fun to watch the intensity. And I think the Vikings are getting a pretty darn good program, you know, team from here on out, and they'll only continue to get better.
Yeah. He's grown on me. And I would say from a, just kind of a biased perspective, kind of begrudgingly so, because I wasn't a big fan at Michigan State as much, but as I've learned more And as I've watched him develop more, you know, you have to be open to, you know, a lot of people talk about players not changing. And I think that that's people who say that, I think, aren't really giving credit to that. People do change and people do develop, and that the change may be subtle, but when it does happen, it's like watching grass grow. So you can be sitting there going, you know, talking for days at a time that the grass hasn't grown. And then, you know, the next week later, after you've forgotten your rant, you need to take the lawnmower out. So it's like, it's the same thing with Cousins. I mean, the one criticism I've had with him that I still kind of, it still exists in his game, but now I'm being the nitpicky person if I bring it up too often, because I'm thinking more on the body of his work as opposed to the recent present.
And I mean
the past 2 years more than anything, which is, he used to have a tendency, because of you mentioning, he had that fine intermediate accuracy and arm strength to do that. Is that I think there were times he tried to make throws that were a little above his arm talent, and in the pocket under pressure, where you'd see him and go, "Wow, you're just going to stick those feet in there and you're going to try and throw this with pressure bearing down on you, and you're not going to make this throw."
Yeah,
like I know you. I've seen enough of you. It's not going to happen. And interception after interception, or just dangerous play. And it used to be for him, like early in his career, it was like every time he did that, and you're just like, "Oh, that's got to be so hard," because it's one of those decisions where, as a young player, it's a blind spot, and it's tough to, when you're in that moment, it's tough to gauge how not to do that, you know, until you're in it again. And it happens so quickly and so dangerously that, you know, you don't want to go, don't have guts, you know, but at the same time, you know, so it used to be like every time, then it felt like it was 70% of the time. And then you're like, is it ever even going to get to a point where it's manageable, or is he always going to do this?
Right.
And now it's gotten to the point where, you know, you look at it, you go, it happens. And I find myself like 2 years ago, see it happen again. I'm thinking, I haven't seen him do this in a long time.
Yeah.
And there's more plays where he hasn't. And so I need to stop that, because it maybe happened like 20% of the time now, as opposed to, you know, 100% of the time. It's like, he's a good quarterback, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I totally get that. I think there's that, you know, that for a lot of guys, you mentioned it earlier, like knowing yourself and your weaknesses with Breeze. And I think understanding that, but there's also, you know, from personal experience, being a quarterback, it's refreshing not to have to fear not making a play, like, you know, kind of going out on a limb. And, and so there's a balance of like, you know, is my coach going to rip my face off if I make this throw or not? And so the nice thing about being in the NFL, you know, when you get paid twice as much as your coach or however much, and then you've built some cred up, you know, it allows you to have some flexibility and freedom to try some things out. You know, you throw four picks, you get benched like Jameis did, but I find it, you know, I think there's a process that quarterbacks almost need to go through at some point where they can, you know, really feel out what they suck at and then what they're, what they're good at. So yeah, it's interesting though.
Yeah. And I think he kind of fits the bill of the quarterback who developed, you know, you can talk about the whole narrative of Mike Shanahan really wanted him more than Robert Griffin. And, you know, and you can talk about that element, but at the same time, Cousins got that development curve that I think a lot of quarterbacks should have gotten. Like Drew Brees got it. Drew Brees got that. Okay. You're our starter. You're in San Diego. We've got Doug Flutie, who's a very accomplished quarterback. But we're going to put you in now. Oh, you messed this up. You've been playing. You're kind of getting in the weeds. Marty Schottenheimer taking him out and saying, you're still my guy. If we get close, you're going to win. But you need to sit down and kind of observe the game a little bit. And Breeze crediting Schottenheimer for a lot of his development because of the way he was handled, that he was kind of put in and out of game situations. And when the game got too big for him, they took him out rather than letting him go into a death spiral. And I think that you know, Kirk Cousins kind of got that because of Robert Griffin's injuries and, you know, and his early play. And, you know, he got benched for Colt McCoy. He got benched for Robert Griffin, but he kept coming, getting back into games and he'd show something. And eventually, you know, he got that. And it's, I wish we got to see more of the intermittent, you know, development of intermittent time on the field, off the field. I think that's the perfect balance, but that's just my theory. But who's your fifth guy? Who's your fifth guy on your list?
You know, see, the problem with this is that now I'm like,
you feel my pain, don't you? Like every year, like doing these things.
If I don't say Tom Brady, everyone's gonna be like, yeah, you know, I picked Tom Brady. So let's pretend Tom Brady's retired.
Okay. And I like that.
The interest of like, talk about someone else. I'm going to pull one out here, and I don't think this guy gets enough credit, but let's go Philip Rivers.
Yeah.
LA Chargers. And, you know, I love so many things about his game that I think people don't. And maybe there's some pride in that for me. Kind of, you know, going against the grain. I think I want to lay on the table first off, like any quarterback coach or person out there that says Philip Rivers has bad mechanics, just needs to, like, I don't know, go learn or read a book or something or do something else. All right, there's some, like, definitely some questionable things that it looked different about the way he throws. And it was like, I think someone described this perfectly. It was like, when he was 7 years old, his dad gave him a full-size weighted football or something and said, here, learn to throw this. And so he never fully developed like this natural over-the-top action. But how are you going to argue that it's been really an issue for him? And then the other, you know, argument is that, you know, you see someone that, you know, that's had that much success. That's like seeing someone that's like 100 years old that still smokes cigarettes. And you'd be like, well, imagine if they didn't smoke cigarettes, maybe they'd be 110. It's like, they're still 100. They still made it a long way. So, you know, maybe his mechanics could be better and there's some things that'd be cleaned up. I think he's got like 15 children. So I don't know when he would have the time to work on his throw. But a couple years ago, he did beat Drew Brees in an accuracy competition at the Pro Bowl. Right. And so number one, like, that's as, you know, out in the open as you get. But at the core of it, he still does the things that are important in biomechanics and how the throw works. He does those as well, you know, as anyone, right? And so, you know, with the stability with the lower body, the acceleration with the hips and the lag and timing of the shoulders. You know, I think the guy has like superhuman strength. I believe he's an over like 400-pound bench presser, which is so bizarre. And wow. And actually has a little translate. It doesn't have very much, you know, it doesn't transfer that well to in terms of like throwing specifically. Like if you go bench 500 pounds, it doesn't mean you'll throw better than, you know, harder than someone. But I think it's a correlating stat. Let's say it's, you know, 350. He's probably got an elite level of strength that's just naturally better than most. And I'm sure that spectrum of strength carries over into other things. So I just feel like that for some reason, the Chargers have been kind of like this. It's almost like the Pac-12 is to the rest of the NFL. The NCAA, like, it's fun over there, but it's like, you know, it happens 3 hours behind and no one really knows and pays attention until they have to, right? And so, you know, Rivers has kind of like done his thing for so long now. It almost seems like with nobody. Now, I know he has, who's the receiver?
Keenan Allen,
I mean, that guy's a stud. I mean, we know he's a war daddy, and then he had Antonio Gates. And so he's had guys. But
He's also had people like Seiji Ejiofor and guys who are like, a lot of people don't know about who are basically journeymen at best. Yeah. You know?
And so I think what you'd find, you know, UCLA's won two games this year with Chip Kelly as the head coach, right? And everyone's like, what? You know, at the beginning when they were like 0-5, everyone's like freaking out saying, you know, what's going on? Why isn't Chip's, the wheels are coming off UCLA? And I was like, well, you guys didn't really understand how good Josh Rosen was in college. Like, that was the difference, right? So Josh Rosen won those games, you know, almost single-handedly. And sorry for any players that get offended by that, but that guy was a stud out there. And so, you know, the Chargers without, you know, Rivers, I don't even know. Like, I'm not even sure what they would be. I heard this great story. I don't even know if it's true about him in a play. But it was a kid that was cut. He was like on the rookie was like a free agent, rookie free agent. And he was telling me, you know, through someone else that he heard that in a play Philip Rivers would like there was a during the like the play action, he actually told the running back who was blitzing and who to block. It was like number 36, you know, and then pulls out of it in mid play and then makes the throw, like telling the guy. And so let's say that's
at the exchange point, telling him at the exchange point who to block.
He's like yelling it out. And so I was like, get out of here. So, and it's almost too good to be true. So that's why it's like, man, maybe he was making that up. Right. But I think the guy knows the game on that innate level where it's like, you know, that scene in the Matrix where I think Neo finally sees the Matrix. It's like, and it's just all, you know, zeros and ones or whatever it is. And I think for a lot of guys where they just see the end of the game is very slow. They see everything before it happens. You can't catch them off guard. And he fits in that category where, you know, there's a couple guys where it doesn't matter who you put them with. They're going to make your team exponentially better. And maybe that's the best way to measure a quarterback, right? Like potentially, you know, how good is your organization without them or with them? And, you know, there's that, it's that the saying, you know, you make everyone else around you better. And I think Rivers has done that for so long and, you know, needs a little more love out there, I think.
Yeah. And I think you're right about Rivers. And it's, I'm glad that you proposed that we just take Tom Brady off this list and assume that he's retired. And for Pats fans, we'll just say, listen, he's got great pocket presence. He maneuvers the pocket unbelievably well. And his deep ball's failing a little bit. But other than that,
I've heard it all before.
You know, we've heard it all before. You can find him anywhere. So we'll
assume he's great. You can go watch his documentary of Tom versus Time. There you go.
So. Exactly. He's great. You know, he has a whole show devoted to him somewhere and he deserves it. So then that puts Goff on my list. So I have then, you know, Rodgers, Wilson, Breeze, and Goff as my four. You've got Rodgers, Goff, Breeze, Cousins, and Rivers. And Rivers would be now my top deserves more love because he was below Goff on my list. And I'll just comment on Rivers and say, one of the things that I loved, and you mentioned that strength, is it was, you know, for as ungainly as he seems moving around, I would say, you know, when you joke about the oversized, the regulation ball as a little kid, I'd say, and if they may have done that with him, which I think is a perfect analogy, but it's also like as if his dad also took two balls and filled them with iron and put them implanted into his legs because the way he moves, he seems like he's dragging around two anvils, but he seems to, what's amazing about him, despite that, is that his ability to get away from coverage, but it's that Drew Brees like timing to alter his footwork just enough to be able to deliver a ball where you're like, how did you hit that over route? Where you had to break through a defensive lineman grabbing your hips and you took like two steps to get away and you let that ball go like two steps earlier than what it seemed like you could have possibly done so. And the ball is exactly where it needs to be. And it's exactly that same Breeze type quality, but it's far less refined looking, but it's still there. Yeah. I mean, it's like, he's in between, you know, it's like he's like further along the evolutionary tree of Bernie Kosar. He's
like the Khloe Kardashian. He's like the bigger, he's that one, but she's still Kardashian. Exactly. He's still, you know, so.
Yeah. But that's. Go ahead.
I think we should also too mention. I think people are going to be mad if you're just like, "What are you doing about Patrick Mahomes on there?" And I think, you know,
oh, he's on my list.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel bad. I mean, it's like, oh gosh, how did I not put him on there? Maybe the only reason I wouldn't put him on there is because he is surrounded by just some studs, but he definitely makes that thing run on another level. And I've still, you know, I get, there's some quarterbacks I get bored. I shouldn't say bored. It's not super exciting. Okay. After every Sunday, I try to scroll through as many, the NFL does a really good job of like every throw from, or, you know, here's the highlights from, and it's condensed in like 7 or 8 minutes. And so for some, you know, game that I didn't watch, I'll try to bang through that just so I have it downloaded in my head. And he's a guy that I'll miss out on a bit of sleep just to stay up and watch, like, okay, what did Pat Mahomes do? You know, and he still, I think, is just doing some things that people just haven't figured out how to defend yet. I don't even know how this is. Balls that he throws, I'm like, how do your receivers even catch that? That's even more impressive.
Yeah.
So I feel bad not mentioning him. He's like, you know, he's up there for me, definitely.
Yeah, he's definitely on my list. So he's my number five guy. I almost felt a little bad putting him on the list because of guys like Rivers or Goff, or I'll even mention Cam Newton, you know, I'll talk about him in a minute too. But Mahomes, for me, I think what it is, you know, you as an evaluator, I try to be careful not to say after 1 year of starting, this guy's great, you know, because you there's so many things with in terms of maybe how a system works with the player. And then if certain things are missing, where his weaknesses are exposed.
Exactly. And I want to see the exposed version. I want to see that more.
Yeah.
Yeah, have a better, you know,
and that's important. And I think that, you know, we look at him in the middle of the field, and there are some plays where he certainly gets baited by linebackers and he thinks he can fit it over a linebacker, and the linebacker is able to get it. If you can get him to make a quick decision under pressure into the middle of the field, his throws aren't always deadly accurate and on that level, and that's a difficult area for him. And we saw what the Patriots were able to do against him in the first half, which was, we're going to cut off either side of the pocket, off the edges, and compress it so much that he cannot step up, and we're going to make him make these off-balance throws, which I thought was like really kind of great by the Patriots defense, just to say, look, everyone's afraid of him making these off-balance plays and all these amazing things that he can do. I don't want to give him time to do anything but do that. Let's make him make all the hard throws, because if we see one hard throw a game, people go, oh, all he does is do this. No, it's one play a game. Make him be 12 of 14 on hard plays like that, because I'd bet that he's going to be 2 of 14 when we do that. And that worked out well. So, but what was crazy about that game is then, you know, Andy Reid came back, made nice adjustments, and prevented that kind of thing from happening to him. And he didn't have to deal with it. And when he did, what I think where I'm give Mahomes enough credit to put him on the list is, I've always contended that he's not a gunslinger in the bad connotation of the word, and where he's reckless. I don't think he's reckless. I think he's daring. And I think and you see it from the throws where he throws the ball away almost as much as I see Tom Brady throw the ball away. Yeah. I mean, like last night against Buffalo, there was like a third and long, and they were in a situation where most quarterbacks get impatient and they're like, I've got to make a play. You know, Sam Darnold at this stage of his game, he's like, I've got to make this play. And I've looked off a receiver already that I should have gone to on a crossing route. Here's a guy in the middle of the field. Someone's bearing down on me. Let me try and fit it in. And it's a dangerous play. And he and other quarterbacks who are younger, Baker Mayfield, kind of lose patience with that flow. Whereas with Tom Brady, it's like it feels like the game could be getting away from him. And he's like, third and seven and pressure's bearing down. He's like, I'm just throwing it away. I'm going to be angry about it. Yeah. And we're going to move on to the next thing.
Play another down. Yeah.
Play another down. And Mahomes does that. Mahomes does that so often for his age in more ways than I've seen with a younger quarterback, that I'm just like, he gets it. And when it's, and when he does take the chance, more often than not, I see him, his throws where he intercepts it is because the ball slipped from his hand. It wasn't a good quality throw, or he just missed kind of what the coverage was doing. But what I don't see him doing is trying to force the ball. And when he does, it's almost invariable. There's so many times placed in an area where the receiver, if the receiver doesn't catch it, no one is. And it's from an angle of him throwing it where I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. Like, you're throwing this across your body, across the field, on the move to your left, and you still had the wherewithal to know that the coverage was not going to be there so that only the receiver could turn back and catch this ball. I'm like, that's, you know, and maybe I'm placing too much credit for it, but it's happened enough times that I look at his game and go, it's that reserve, it's that maturity, it's the, how would I put it? It's kind of like, it's almost a modesty in a sense for a guy who you look at him with the, you know, with the haircut and the, and mm-hmm. the way that he plays the game and the daring, but there's even an underlying modesty to right. how he respects what's going on that I just go, how do you have that at this age? And he even had it later in Texas Tech, yep. like, you know, and you're just going, that's what people didn't get about him. And that's why, yeah, I look at him and I go, the fact that you already have that, if you don't lose that, you're going to be on this list for the next 10 years, the 100%. Next 14 years, you know? So yeah, that's where I'm at with Mahomes.
Yeah.
But is there anybody yeah. else in yeah. addition to that you'd want to say deserves mention?
I think there's a guy that, you know, deserves mention. And I think I was kind of more polarized by they lost the first three games, Deshaun Watson. I felt like actually he's come on really strong, and I think they've won four straight or something like that, five straight. And it wasn't, you know, he had, I think the most recent game he accounted for five touchdowns, which was super impressive. And I feel like his game is like clicking back together. So it just took him a little bit of time for the team to figure out, you know, what they were doing and where they were doing it. And I'm excited to see, you know, how, if he gets back, and I feel like he is getting back in the rhythm of things and is going to have a great year. And they're kind of getting everything together down there in Houston. I can say, I felt like, you know, again, the 0-3 start really just like, oh, well, that's not where we expected. We were, you know, expecting that amazing, you know, daredevil plays. But I think he's got such a, I don't want to say unique game, but he's found a way to, again, take his athleticism and make it about, you know, extending the play in a way to create explosive plays with his arm and then with his feet. So I'm enjoying watching his progression, and I think he's another guy that's, you know, deserves mention and could very well be in that top five. It just, there's some turnovers and fumbles and stuff that went on a little bit crazy at the beginning of the season, but I think it's on the way up.
Yeah. And I can totally see that. And it's fun to watch him improve in the middle of the field. And he also is another guy that, for his ability to extend a play, sees the middle of the field pretty darn well in ways that I didn't necessarily see all the time at Clemson, but mm-hmm. it's gotten better. And he does have that, you know, the people worrying about the arm velocity just don't understand that there are, you know, the arm strength is there to be able to make deeper throws, intermediate throws in certain game plans that they tailor with him that are well. I mean, you know, there are a lot of players who can throw the heck out of a ball, but can't throw a deep cross well, who don't yep. throw a deep post well, who don't throw a corner or sail route well. And as great as their arm strength is, they consistently overthrow it. So you might as well not even include it in the game plan because they're rarely going to hit it, even though that's an important throw. But Watson is great at those three throws. He may not throw the deep comeback or the intermediate out across the field when someone's pinning him in and he's got to dig in and throw that. He may not deliver that well, but those, you know, he has more throws in a wide variety of what an offense would ask him to do. He has more of those that he can make than what he can't. And,
right.
And that's, and what he can do to extend a play gives you an added element that pretty much negates it, unless you have a very specific defense that is going to force him to make those two throws that he doesn't make well, down after down after down. If you can find a defense that does that, then yeah, they're going to beat him, but there yep. aren't many.
So, 100%, no doubt.
Yeah. So I mean, when we wrap this up, I mean, I'm going to wrap it up with Cam Newton. We've got yeah. you at, you know, we've got you with Rodgers, Goff, Breeze, Rivers, Cousins, and then Watson and Mahomes as guys deserve more mention.
Yeah.
And I've got Rodgers, Wilson, Breeze, Goff, and Mahomes with Rivers and Cam Newton as my guy. And Cam Newton, I'll just add, is, you know, to end this, is he's such an anchor in the pocket. He's taken so much punishment over the years. And yeah, you can say he's a bigger guy. But I remember when Steve McNair was a bigger guy. And I remember the things they had to do to get him onto the field and how his game really broke down before he really hit his prime. Like it was, I think if Steve McNair played today, he would be a Hall of Fame quarterback. I think if he played in this era and played in a different offense, if they had drafted Randy Moss and instead of Kevin Dyson, I think we would have seen a Titans team with that defense with a multiple Super Bowl thing. But Steve McNair is like one of my favorite players, period. So when I think of Steve McNair, I think of Cam Newton in the respect that he's taken a lot of punishment. He's a very physical guy, but he's underrated in his ability to throw from the pocket.
Yeah.
He's someone that can create, and this team has asked him to carry him on his back, you know, in a lot of ways offensively. And the diversity, the versatility of what they can do with him. I mean, I'm loving what's going on in the past several weeks, because I've been kind of critical of, oh, here's Norv Turner. He took his ball and went home in Minnesota when they asked him to change with Sam Bradford, you know, to change for Sam Bradford. Here he is going to Carolina, and they drafted Curtis Samuel, and they drafted DJ Moore. Well, he okayed that pick, but they had Curtis Samuel and McCaffrey, and I'm sitting there thinking, they can run so many fun things with options, and spread this offense apart. What's Norv Turner going to do with that? Is he going to go back to, well, this is the way I want to do my offense, and I've had this kind of tenure in the NFL, and I'm going to be a stick in the mud? And with kind of Jimmy Johnson's influence and openness as well, you're seeing, you know, against the Ravens, I mean, they had a sequence of plays where it was like you lined Curtis Samuel on one side and you put DJ Moore on the same side, and then you have McCaffrey in the backfield, and they fake the read to McCaffrey to the left, and they pull the guard to the right and have Newton kind of following behind the guard. And next thing you know, he pitches the ball behind him to DJ Moore. And it's fantastic. And they're doing awesome. All different little variations of this. And it's not just in the red zone anymore. So when you get a guy who can also win from the pocket, but he's such a legitimate threat as your option quarterback or your grinded out fullback in the red zone, it's like they're finally giving him personnel that I look at this and go, this could be so much fun and so dangerous and difficult for defenses that it, to me, it's like they finally going, let's use him the way he's meant to be used, which is for all of his skills.
Exactly. You know, I got a good chance to sit down with Scott Turner before the season, who's the North son, who's also the quarterback coach there. And we had a really good conversation about, you know, his thoughts on Cam. And it just seemed like he had a really good connection and really identified, you know, real specifics. So I'm like, okay, we need to get better at this. And I think we're seeing that. And that's that, and the creativity and the play calling, which is fun to see from a name that's been in the, you know, so long. It's like, I just love seeing evolution in football. It's good for the game. So
yeah,
I would agree.
Absolutely. Well, listen, this was great for my podcast to have you on once again.
I appreciate you having me.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, for those of you who haven't followed Will Hewlett, you can follow him on Twitter it's at Will Hewlett, correct?
Yep. At Will Hewlett. Yep. And that's about, I don't tweet a whole lot, but sometimes I do. I appreciate you having me on, man. It's been a blast as usual.
Absolutely. It was great. And I would definitely recommend following him, because when he does deliver something, it's going to be something very insightful about the quarterback position a lot of times when he's tweeting about that position. So, you know, on behalf of Will, thank you again for listening to the RSP cast. You can check out more of them on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher and Blueberry. Please rate and review if you enjoyed it or had some critical feedback that you'd like to provide here. I'm over 100 players in right now, evaluating for the 2019 Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication, which will be available, as it has been for the past 14 years, on April 1st. And you also get a post-draft addendum that comes with it the week after the NFL draft. Both are great for fantasy football, but also if you're a draft nick, or if you're someone that I've gotten feedback who likes to evaluate the game or analyze the game from a media perspective, as well as from an operations standpoint. This gives you a lot of in-depth information, and, appreciate you checking that out at www.mattwaldmanrsp.com. Hope you guys have a terrific week.